Science and Health, Chapter 7, Physiology. Therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what ye shall eat or what ye shall drink, nor yet for your body, what ye shall put on. Is not the life more than meat, and the body than raiment? Jesus. He sent his word and healed them, and delivered them from their destructions. Psalms. Physiology is one of the apples from the tree of knowledge. Evil declared that eating this fruit would open man's eyes and make him as a god. Instead of so doing, it closed the eyes of mortals to man's God-given dominion over the earth. To measure intellectual capacity by the size of the brain and strength by the exercise of muscle is to subjugate intelligence, to make mind mortal, and to place this so-called mind at the mercy of material organization and non-intelligent matter. Obedience to the so-called physical laws of health has not checked sickness. Diseases have multiplied since man-made material theories took the place of spiritual truth. You say that indigestion, fatigue, sleeplessness cause distressed stomachs and aching heads. Then you consult your brain in order to remember what has hurt you, when your remedy lies in forgetting the whole thing. For matter has no sensation of its own, and the human mind is all that can produce pain. As a man thinketh, so is he. Mind is all that feels, acts, or impedes action. Ignorant of this, or shrinking from its implied responsibility, the healing effort is made on the wrong side, and thus the conscious control over the body is lost. The Mohammedan believes in a pilgrimage to Mecca for the salvation of his soul. The popular doctor believes in his prescription, and the pharmacist believes in the power of his drugs to save a man's life. The Mohammedan's belief is a religious delusion. The doctors and pharmacists is a medical mistake. The erring human mind is inharmonious in itself. From it arises the inharmonious body. To ignore God as of little use in sickness is a mistake. Instead of thrusting him aside in times of bodily trouble and waiting for the hour of strength in which to acknowledge him, we should learn that he can do all things for us in sickness as in health. Failing to recover health through adherence to physiology and hygiene, the despairing invalid often drops them, and in his extremity, and only as a last resort, turns to God. The invalid's faith in the divine mind is less than in drugs, air, and exercise, or he would have resorted to mind first. The balance of power is conceded to be with matter by most of the medical systems. But when mind at last asserts its mastery over sin, disease, and death, then is man found to be harmonious and immortal. Should we implore a corporeal God to heal the sick out of his personal volition? Or should we understand the infinite divine principle which heals? If we rise no higher than blind faith, the science of healing is not attained, and soul existence, in the place of sense existence, is not comprehended. We apprehend life in divine science only as we live above corporeal sense and correct it. Our proportionate admission of the claims of good or of evil determines the harmony of our existence, our health, our longevity, and our Christianity. We cannot serve two masters nor perceive divine science with the material senses. Drugs and hygiene cannot successfully usurp the place and power of the divine source of all health and perfection. If God made man both good and evil, man must remain thus. What can improve God's work? Again, an error in the premise must appear in the conclusion. To have one God and avail yourself of the power of Spirit, you must love God supremely. The flesh lusteth against the Spirit. The flesh and Spirit can no more unite in action than good can coincide with evil. It is not wise to take a halting and halfway position or to expect to work equally with spirit and matter, truth and error. There is but one way, namely God and His idea, which leads to spiritual being. The scientific government of the body must be attained through the divine mind. It is impossible to gain control over the body in any other way. On this fundamental point, timid conservatism is absolutely inadmissible. Only through radical reliance on truth can scientific healing power be realized. Substituting good words for a good life, fair-seeming for straightforward character, is a poor shift for the weak and worldly, who think the standard of Christian Science too high for them. If the scales are evenly adjusted, the removal of a single weight from either scale gives preponderance to the opposite. Whatever influence you cast on the side of matter, you take away from mind, which would otherwise outweigh all else. Your belief militates against your health when it ought to be enlisted on the side of health. When sick, according to belief, you rush after drugs, search out the material so-called laws of health, and depend upon them to heal you, though you have already brought yourself into the slough of disease through just this false belief. Because man-made systems insist that man becomes sick and useless, suffers and dies, all in consonance with the laws of God, are we to believe it? Are we to believe an authority which denies God's spiritual command relating to perfection, an authority which Jesus proved to be false? He did the will of the Father. He healed sickness in defiance of what is called material law, but in accordance with God's law, the law of mind. I have discerned disease in the human mind and recognized the patient's fear of it months before the so-called disease made its appearance in the body. Disease being a belief, a latent illusion of mortal mind, the sensation would not appear if the error of belief was met and destroyed by truth. Here let a word be noticed which will be better understood hereafter: chemicalization. By chemicalization, I mean the process which mortal mind and body undergo in the change of belief from a material to a spiritual basis. Whenever an aggravation of symptoms has occurred through mental chemicalization, I have seen the mental signs assuring me that danger was over before the patient felt the change, and I have said to the patient, "You are healed," sometimes to his discomfiture when he was incredulous. But it always came about as I had foretold. I name these facts to show that disease has a mental, mortal origin, that faith in rules of health or in drugs begets and fosters disease by attracting the mind to the subject of sickness, by exciting fear of disease, and by dosing the body in order to avoid it. The faith reposed in these things should find stronger supports and a higher home. If we understood the control of mind over body, we should put no faith in material means. Science not only reveals the origin of all disease as mental, but it also declares that all disease is cured by divine mind. There can be no healing except by this mind, however much we trust a drug or any other means towards which human faith or endeavor is directed. It is mortal mind, not matter, which brings to the sick whatever good they may seem to receive from materiality. But the sick are never really healed except by means of the divine power. Only the action of truth, life, and love can give harmony. Whatever teaches man to have other laws and to acknowledge other powers than the divine mind is anti-Christian. The good that a poisonous drug seems to do is evil, for it robs man of reliance on God, omnipotent mind, and according to belief, poisons the human system. Truth is not the basis of theogony. Modes of matter form neither a moral nor a spiritual system. The discord which calls for material methods is the result of the exercise of faith in material modes, faith in matter instead of in spirit. Did Jesus understand the economy of man less than Graham or Cutter? Christian ideas certainly present what human theories exclude, the principle of man's harmony. The text, "Whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die," not only contradicts human systems, but points to the self-sustaining and eternal truth. The demands of truth are spiritual and reach the body through mind. The best interpreter of man's needs said, "Take no thought for your life what ye shall eat or what ye shall drink." If there are material laws which prevent disease, what then causes it? Not divine law, for Jesus healed the sick and cast out error, always in opposition, never in obedience to physics. Spiritual causation is the one question to be considered, for more than all others, spiritual causation relates to human progress. The age seems ready to approach this subject, to ponder somewhat the supremacy of spirit, and at least to touch the hem of truth's garment. The description of man as purely physical, or as both material and spiritual, but in either case dependent upon his physical organization, is the Pandora box from which all ills have gone forth, especially despair. Matter, which takes divine power into its own hands and claims to be a creator, is a fiction. in which paganism and lust are so sanctioned by society that mankind has caught their moral contagion. Through discernment of the spiritual opposite of materiality, even the way through Christ truth, man will reopen with the key of divine science the gates of paradise which human beliefs have closed, and will find himself unfallen, upright, pure, and free, not needing to consult almanacs for the probabilities either of his life or of the weather, not needing to study brainology to learn how much of a man he is. Mind's control over the universe, including man, is no longer an open question, but is demonstrable science. Jesus illustrated the divine principle and the power of immortal mind by healing sickness and sin and destroying the foundations of death. Mistaking his origin and nature, man believes himself to be combined matter and spirit. He believes that spirit is sifted through matter, carried on a nerve, exposed to ejection by the operation of matter. The intellectual, the moral, the spiritual, yea, the image of infinite mind, subject to non-intelligence. No more sympathy exists between the flesh and spirit than between Belial and Christ. The so-called laws of matter are nothing but false beliefs that intelligence and life are present where mind is not. These false beliefs are the procuring cause of all sin and disease. The opposite truth, that intelligence and life are spiritual, never material, destroys sin, sickness, and death. The fundamental error lies in the supposition that man is a material outgrowth, and that the cognizance of good or evil, which he has through the bodily senses, constitutes his happiness or misery. Theorizing about man's development from mushrooms to monkeys and from monkeys into men amounts to nothing in the right direction and very much in the wrong. Materialism grades the human species as rising from matter upward. How then is the material species maintained if man passes through what we call death, and death is the Rubicon of spirituality? Spirit can form no real link in this supposed chain of material being, but divine science reveals the eternal chain of existence as uninterrupted and wholly spiritual. Yet this can be realized only as the false sense of being disappears. If man was first a material being, he must have passed through all the forms of matter in order to become man. If the material body is man, he is a portion of matter or dust. On the contrary, man is the image and likeness of spirit, and the belief that there is soul in sense or life in matter obtains in mortals, alias mortal mind, to which the apostle refers when he says that we must put off the old man. What is man? Brain, heart, blood, bones, etc., the material structure? If the real man is in the material body, you take away a portion of the man when you amputate a limb. The surgeon destroys manhood, and worms annihilate it. But the loss of a limb or injury to a tissue is sometimes the quickener of manliness, and the unfortunate cripple may present more nobility than the statuesque athlete, teaching us by his very deprivations that a man's a man for a that. When we admit that matter, heart, blood, brain, acting through the five physical senses, constitutes man, we fail to see how anatomy can distinguish between humanity and the brute, or determine when man is really man and has progressed farther than his animal progenitors. When the supposition that spirit is within what it creates and the potter is subject to the clay is individualized, truth is reduced to the level of error, and the sensible is required to be made manifest through the insensible. What is termed matter manifests nothing but a material mentality. Neither the substance nor the manifestation of spirit is obtainable through matter. Spirit is positive. Matter is spirit's contrary, the absence of spirit. For positive spirit to pass through a negative condition would be spirit's destruction. Anatomy declares man to be structural. Physiology continues this explanation, measuring human strength by bones and sinews, and human life by material law. Man is spiritual, individual, and eternal. Material structure is mortal. Phrenology makes man knavish or honest according to the development of the cranium. But anatomy, physiology, phrenology do not define the image of God, the real immortal man. Human reason and religion come slowly to the recognition of spiritual facts, and so continue to call upon matter to remove the error which the human mind alone has created. The idols of civilization are far more fatal to health and longevity than are the idols of barbarism. The idols of civilization call into action less faith than Buddhism in a supreme governing intelligence. The Eskimo restore health by incantations as consciously as do civilized practitioners by their more studied methods. Is civilization only a higher form of idolatry, that man should bow down to a flesh brush, to flannels, to baths, diet, exercise, and air? Nothing save divine power is capable of doing so much for man as he can do for himself. The footsteps of thought, rising above material standpoints, are slow and portend a long night to the traveler. But the angels of his presence, the spiritual intuitions that tell us when the night is far spent, the day is at hand, are our guardians in the gloom. Whoever opens the way in Christian Science is a pilgrim and stranger, marking out the path for generations yet unborn. The thunder of Sinai and the Sermon on the Mount are pursuing and will overtake the ages, rebuking in their course all error and proclaiming the kingdom of heaven on earth. Truth is revealed. It needs only to be practiced. Mortal belief is all that enables a drug to cure mortal ailments. Anatomy admits that mind is somewhere in man, though out of sight. Then, if an individual is sick, why treat the body alone and administer a dose of despair to the mind? Why declare that the body is diseased and picture this disease to the mind, rolling it under the tongue as a sweet morsel and holding it before the thought of both physician and patient? We should understand that the cause of disease obtains in the mortal human mind, and its cure comes from the immortal divine mind. We should prevent the images of disease from taking form in thought, and we should efface the outlines of disease already formulated in the minds of mortals. When there are fewer prescriptions and less thought is given to sanitary subjects, there will be better constitutions and less disease. In old times, whoever heard of dyspepsia, cerebrospinal meningitis, hay fever, and rose cold? What an abuse of natural beauty to say that a rose, the smile of God, can produce suffering. The joy of its presence, its beauty and fragrance, should uplift the thought and dissuade any sense of fear or fever. It is profane to fancy that the perfume of clover and the breath of new-mown hay can cause glandular inflammation, sneezing, and nasal pangs. If a random thought calling itself dyspepsia had tried to tyrannize over our forefathers, it would have been routed by their independence and industry. Then people had less time for selfishness, coddling, and sickly after-dinner talk. The exact amount of food the stomach could digest was not discussed, according to Cutter, nor referred to sanitary laws. A man's belief in those days was not so severe upon the gastric juices. Beaumont's medical experiments did not govern the digestion. Damp atmosphere and freezing snow empurpled the plump cheeks of our ancestors, but they never indulged in the refinement of inflamed bronchial tubes. They were as innocent as Adam before he ate the fruit of false knowledge of the existence of tubercles and troches, lungs and lozenges. Where ignorance is bliss, 'tis folly to be wise, says the English poet, and there is truth in his sentiment. The action of mortal mind on the body was not so injurious before inquisitive modern Eves took up the study of medical works, and unmanly Adams attributed their own downfall and the fate of their offspring to the weakness of their wives. The primitive custom of taking no thought about food left the stomach and bowels free to act in obedience to nature, and gave the gospel a chance to be seen in its glorious effects upon the body. A ghastly array of diseases was not paraded before the imagination. There were fewer books on digestion and more sermons in stones and good in everything. When the mechanism of the human mind gives place to the divine mind, selfishness and sin, disease and death, will lose their foothold.